other night, I came down, sat down next to my wife on the sofa, and I opened up my laptop. And I smiled because right there was a picture of the two of us just a couple of months after we first met. And that's a good love story in my mind. It's had a long, great run. It's not over by any stretch, but it was just a wonderful reminder of God's many, many gifts to us over the years. Well, there's nothing like a good love story. And Greg and Aaron, how about you? You've told your love story before, but how do you like to recount it? What are some ways that really are wonderful for you to reflect on that?
So often, you know, when we speak, we tell our love story and how we met, you know, praying in class. And actually, Greg was sound asleep in class in college,
yes.
And I woke him up to try to help him. But, you know, so we tell these stories when we speak, but we'll also tell them like sitting around the dinner table with our kids, and our kids just laugh. They think it's so funny. But it's just, it is, we realize that we tell these stories all the time with just what we do.
It's a good way for us to remember as couples when we tell those stories that I love this person and I want to keep the love there. But sometimes life kind of crushes that out of you. It makes it difficult. And let's go ahead now and hear from Pastor Kevin Thompson, who shares about a concept called staying in love, which is something we all strive for. Here's Kevin with Jim Daly.
Staying in love really is a choice. I mean, you know, 70 years like Eugene and his wife, that's a long time. It helps to look back at that moment when we fell in love. And I think you recall a special moment with Jenny about your first date in the book. What happened?
Yeah.
First date memories. I love these.
That's exactly right. And so I was a pastoral ministry major at Oklahoma Baptist University with a minor in psychology. And so I was actually taking a family intimacy course at that moment, which is hilarious to look back on now. Yeah. I would love to sit back through that now, right? A 20-year-old kid. What did I know, right?
I'm sure you could pontificate.
there's no doubt. But I remember reading in that class that idea that generally speaking, women tend to make the first touch. That tends to happen. I don't know if that's true or not. Kind of touch of some sort, and that the man needs to reciprocate that, and that there's this kind of intricate dance that's going on that couples aren't really even aware of. That anybody listening who's not married currently on their next date, they'll notice, right? And so I asked Jenny out. We went out downtown Oklahoma City. We walked around for hours. It was beautiful, and I'll never forget. We were talking, and I made a joke, and she hit me, punched me, just very lightly, playfully. And so we kept on walking, and suddenly it hit me. Oh wait, she just touched me. I have to touch her back. There has to be some way to touch
like
her back.
It was like this mental decision.
No, that's exactly right.
Touch her back.
Class had taught me, right?
Exactly right. Touch her back.
So I just look for just a touch on the shoulder, right? Very easy. But it's interesting looking back on that. Of the power of non-sexual touch and the importance of that and how that really kind of goes back to friendship. It really does. That idea of touch goes back to friendship. It plays into the intimacy, no doubt. But you think about it. I mean, if I make a great putt on the golf course, my buddy's going to high-five me, right? If I'm grieving, my friends are going to embrace me. And so there is this necessary non-sexual touch that I think if couples would increase, they would then see the intimacy increase. And notice what's happening. If you want to be a better lover, generally speaking, how do you do that? Become a better friend and a better partner.
That's right.
Build the foundation and the walls. I'm not saying it goes just that easily, but generally speaking, for the average couple out there that's in a decent marriage and they want it to be just a little bit better, what they need to be thinking about is friendship. I say in the book that skittish is the opposite of sexy. Right? Skittish. What does that mean? There's no trust. And whenever I think about these roles, friendship is built on this concept of trust. Partnership then is built on the idea of respect. Well, if you have trust and respect, intimacy can be pretty good. But if either of those two aren't present, you're in trouble.
And we're right near the end. And that was really the next question, the five keys. And you've mentioned a couple of them, the five keys to saving your marriage, which you list. And I'll read them, and then you can just give us a highlight or two. Humility, respect, mercy, communication, and resilience. So, I mean, they're right there in the book. I think those are really strong. Let me just pick one, resilience. How does resilience in your marriage help you have a long-term committed marriage, a lifelong marriage?
It is this idea of we're going to make it. Whatever it takes.
No matter what.
Whatever it takes, yeah. We're going to make it. Now notice what that means. Because a lot of couples think we're going to make it, but then they're not willing to go get counseling. They're not willing to go to Hope Restored. They're not willing to take the next step. Whatever it takes means that I'm not going to care about my appearances. I'm not going to care about my reputation. That literally I will sacrifice everything in order to make sure I do whatever is necessary for Jenny and I to have a successful relationship. And that is our mindset. And so what that means, if we have a problem, we're going to go get help. Well, we're in a small town. What happens if somebody sees us? Well, they see us.
Good.
So be it.
Yeah, I like that.
And so it is this idea. We have a counselor that's down the office in our church hallway. And I'll tell couples on occasion, you need to go see this counselor. And sometimes they will say, oh, I can't walk this church hallway with all these staff people and them see us go in. And I always tell them, you know what we're thinking in that moment? Good for them. Good for them. They're getting help. Well, I don't sit back and judge, go, oh, I wonder why they're walking in there.
Right.
I think to myself, there's 1,000 reasons why I need to be walking in.
Right. That's a better attitude.
And so resilience really does mean to me that we're going to do whatever it takes, which means we're going to confront the true issues in our relationship and not push them aside, because we're going to do whatever it takes to make it.
Well, I so appreciated what Kevin Thompson had to say. Greg, it takes work. How do we stay confident rather than pessimistic? And how do you do that personally in your relationship with Aaron?
Yeah, we decided a long time ago that we're going to remove the word divorce from our vocabulary. So we don't joke about it. We're not sarcastic with that word. We really don't use that. I think another thing that we do that I really enjoy doing is that we'll say to each other, hey, I'm with you till the end. Hmm. And what that means to me is that Aaron is saying, you know, it doesn't matter what's going to happen. We'll figure it out. We'll work through it because I'm with you till the end. I always tell Aaron that I know that she loves me, but actually what's more important is to know that she likes me. So even her saying, man, you're one of my best friends, or if not my very best friend, I like you. I mean, that solidifies that commitment, and it causes me just to know that doesn't matter what's going to happen. Not only are we going to stay together, but we're going to figure out ways to actually enjoy each other and be best friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in order to do that, we need to make sure that we're repairing things within our relationship. So it's not like we're going to live in la la land and just, you know, take divorce out of our vocabulary and, you know, I'm with you to the end. It means that on a daily basis, we are doing the work of continuing to build a close connection that feels good to both of us. And that's important. And so when something happens and it doesn't feel good to one of us or to both of us, we talk about it after the fact. We don't try to talk about it in the moment because anyone who has read any of our stuff hears how it goes in the moment, especially early on in our relationship. But, you know, just continuing to grow as individuals and just really be intentional about not letting resentment build.
You know, I think too, another thing that we've learned to do is, you know, a lot of people have bucket lists. So as an individual, this is what I want to do before, you know, I kick the bucket. Well, we actually have that as a couple, and there are places that we want to go, things that we want to do someday, you know, like go to the Holy Lands is a big one that we've talked about. And when you have these dreams that we're looking forward to, that's another way that we keep our commitment strong together. I mean, we look for ways to minister together as a couple. Again, Erin has her own calling as a counselor. God's using her in mighty ways. And, you know, I have my individual callings, but we've really worked on figuring out how can we use our marriage to help strengthen others or to bless someone else. And I think when we do those kinds of things, when we look into the future, that's why actually, John, there was research done that showed things that helped keep a couple together for the long term. Mm-hmm. And remember, Aaron, one of the things that they found is when they bought long-term appliances together.
I was thinking of that as we were talking about this, and I was like, what was that research? Yeah. And they found that couples that invested in more quality long-term appliances were more likely to stay together because they had a vision for the future.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to be together for 25 years, so we need to find something that we can use for that long.
Of course, today it doesn't seem like appliances last quite so long. I wish I could go back to the original washer and dryer that we had.
Something that works longer than 2 years.
Yes.
Well, there are a lot of little things along the way, and thank you for sharing, you know, some of your own insights on this. And certainly we heard some great ideas from Kevin Thompson. If you'd like to hear the whole conversation with Kevin, we do have a free download. It's called Embracing Your Role as a Spouse. Look for that in the show notes. And look for his book, Friends, Partners, and Lovers, What It Takes to Make Your Marriage Work. We've got that available to you when you make a generous donation of any amount to the Ministry of Focus on the Family. We're listener-supported. We need your contributions to continue on with great podcasts like this one. And so please make a monthly pledge as you're able to or a one-time gift. And we'll say thanks for joining the support team by sending that book from Kevin Thompson, Friends, Partners, and Lovers. We'll have all the details in the show notes. And next time, we'll be hearing from Gary Thomas once more about loving your spouse in a godly way. And for now, on behalf of Aaron and Greg Smalley and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for the Focus on the Family Marriage Podcast.
At Focus on the Family, we know you want to see your grandchildren follow Christ. Here's how you do that. The Legacy Grandparenting Summit, the only national conference on Christian grandparenting, coming to over 100 locations on October 20th and 21st. You'll find wisdom, direction, and inspiration from speakers including Ann Graham Lotz and Miles McPherson. Register now for the Legacy Grandparenting Summit at legacycoalition.com/summit.